Chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.
Hello there, this is Ian Bolesworth, and I host the Ian Bolesworth Show on... That's what they've written on here, the Ian Bolesworth Show. I've always considered it just the it's a show, innit? It's just... Either way, it's on every Monday from 4 till 6 p.m. And I'm just sat in the studio on my own. It's sat here ready to work. The truth is, I don't... Beyond the basics, I don't really know the actual buttons. I don't know how you record it. I know that Audacity comes up sometimes, and I know they press record at some point, but I don't know how they work it. But I hope you're doing okay, and I hope you're enjoying listening to this stuff on FooBar for the Stay Home and Chill program that they are doing. Very good it is too. The clock isn't working on the monitor, but it's the time. Look on your own clock, it's that time. That's what time it is now. And here's a repeat of... I don't really know the other shows. Nick Helm's on, isn't he? This is Nick Helm's show. I reserve the right to not be sued if it isn't. It's our show. It might be my own. Could be me. I hope it is me. Here's my show.
James Acaster on FooBar Radio.
And my guest that I put on shuffle is Mike Wozniak. Mike, let's delve into your iTunes.
Oh, God.
I'm going to press shuffle now. Yep. And we're going to see what it throws up. Here we go. The iTunes of Mike Wozniak.
Oh, okay, good.
Perfect.
Good. Talking away. I don't know what I'm to say. I'll say it anyway. Today is my day to find you shying away. I'm coming for your love, okay? Take on me.
Aha! I've become Partridge all the way now. Aha, on FooBar Radio. Take on Me, that is from the iPod of Mike Wozniak. Surprised, Mike?
Delighted. I thought initially that maybe it had just gone strained away, that it wasn't shuffling and it had just...
Yeah.
It was a sort of very sort of pedantic iTunes programme that got there. But no.
It's quite rare that
very pleased with that. I mean, disco smash hit.
Yeah, I mean that. I mean, I don't think anyone's the turning their nose up at that. Sure.
In the discotheque. I mean, if you are, then you're made of stone.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, your blood's gone cold.
What is wrong with you if you're not dancing to that one?
Check
that
in.
On.
Yeah.
Where are they from again? Sweden.
I thought they were Norwegian.
Norwegian.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm getting a nod there.
Amanda's nodding.
The producer. Yeah.
Yeah, of course she knows. Amanda, I imagine you dance to them quite a lot. Wouldn't you? Still do? Still does.
Of course.
Probably was dancing earlier. Sorry I didn't look around and see
blood
how much you're enjoying yourself. Yeah. Blood runs hot. Like a jacuzzi. Jacuzzi blood. It's a good name for a band. I'd call the band that.
Yeah.
Would you be in my band if I asked you to join it, Mike?
Yeah. Do I get to pick my instrument?
Yeah.
Maybe like a sort of bass trombone?
Good. I was worried you were going to say bass and I've got dibs on that. But, yeah.
What kind of bass are we talking? Bass guitar?
Bass flute.
Oh,
bass flute,
nice.
Bass trombone.
Big sort of curly bit at the end.
Yeah.
You can sort of also be a sort of shepherd on the weekends.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Or German, we could play in the field.
Yeah, fine.
Do you play Glastonbury or something like that?
It's fully immersive experience.
Yeah.
Sort of shepherd jazz.
Everyone just shepherd jazz.
Yeah.
Shep jazz?
It's time, isn't it? Those two things haven't been fused, I don't think.
No, jazz has been infused with most things, but not shepherding.
It might be happening right now on the Peak District. There might be some shepherds getting together and just playing it fast and loose.
Bass instruments.
5-4.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Favourite time signature, 5-4?
Yeah. For the old jazz.
It's a good one, isn't it? Because it's just one beat more than you expected, so it completely throws you off.
Yep.
Yeah.
I like to play in 5-4 with everyone else playing in 4-4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because then you loop around with them.
Yeah, exactly. I really make my mark. Well, you get one extra. Well, you can either do it like loop round, or I play 5-4, like, you know, the bars match up, so I just get one extra beat per bar.
But No, it doesn't work. It's like,
well, you say it doesn't work. That's because you're a sort of, you know, you're one of the suits, these guys. You're one of the sort of conventional grey men.
I hate to be this guy.
Put me in a pigeonhole.
I don't want to be that guy, but if they're leaving a pause for you to catch up.
They're not leaving a pause. No one's leaving.
So what are they doing?
They're just carrying on, and I'm playing in a different time signature.
Yep.
At the same time, but at a different time. Same time, different time is the name of our
concept album.
Yeah.
Same time, different time, all the time.
I will admit that it's both stressful to play and listen to.
Yeah, yeah, it's horrible to listen to.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No one likes it.
No.
It's not pleasant at all, because there's somebody who doesn't understand type signatures playing all the way through it.
No.
Well, I mean, I really should play a song now.
Go on, then.
Here's my iPod. Let's see what the first shuffle song is.
If you think you're bulletproof, you're right, because you've weathered all my slings and arrows. Well, if you think I'm paranoid, that's fine, 'cause I've got evidence on my side. Please be kind, don't drop the rock on me.
Milo Kiley, Bulletproof. That's what that song's called.
Very soon.
From the album Takeoffs and Landings. You knew that already, right?
Yeah, sure.
You already knew that.
Don't need to tell me.
Yeah. Great album.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Very nice band. It's Jenny Lewis.
Is it all like that? Is it all like that sort of thing?
Yeah, some stuff that's a bit more, you know, full band. Drums.
I think I've got the Juno soundtrack on their iTunes. That's that
really?
Sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it'd be that kind of vibe. Yeah, she's done more country, almost country music stuff on her own. She used to be a child actor.
Really?
Yeah, Jenny Lewis. She used to be a child actor.
Anything I'd know?
No, nothing that I even know.
Nothing on your sort of railway children level?
No.
She's
no,
not one of your Jenny Agutter types?
No. She grew up to do dirty movies.
Jenny Agutter?
The railway children girl, yeah.
No. She did an American Werewolf in Paris.
Did she do one dirty film as
a shower scene?
Okay,
but I mean, I think that you're showing your very conservative background now.
But my dad told me that she grew up and did a. But then I was a little kid, so he probably meant something like that.
Yeah,
she did a naughty film when she was older.
She did a very good film with an adult scene. Perhaps you could say
he was probably saying that to me, unaware that I knew what pornography was, and I probably thought she did a porno.
What age are we talking about?
Yeah. I don't know, I was probably 10.
Yeah?
You're
already sort of versed with pornography.
I never watched it, but kids at school talked about it.
In Kettering?
It reached Kettering. Porn.
I'm shocked.
Boys talk about that stuff.
Yeah. I don't know, 10. Maybe I'm naive. Maybe I feel like I was a bit older before I sort of got into
it. You weren't. Listen to you.
I don't know.
At 10, you probably had this voice already.
Oh, I did have the voice already, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a full mustache.
It was very unsettling.
Yeah.
For people that I met.
Even the teacher. Mike, leave the room, please. You're upsetting all the other children.
Yeah, but I didn't. I had, maybe I was, maybe. I have a memory of being 12 and my friend Marcus Reynolds taking me into his, staying at his house and him, I probably shouldn't use his real name.
It's his full name, you've used his full name here.
He does live in New Zealand now, so he'll probably be alright. Although this is online, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which they have.
He can absolutely get hold of this.
Yeah, and he'd managed to find something.
He found something, Eddie.
In the house.
Yeah.
And yeah. But there was an empty house, and he then told me that what we now do is that there were two bathrooms in his house, and he put me in one with something. Publication. He was going to go to the other one, and then he said, "See you in half an hour." Which I was very confused. I didn't really, because obviously, I mean, this was before anything. I was quite late developing with this stuff.
Sure.
So nothing had really kicked in properly by this stage.
So you just read the articles.
I was really unsure about how long I should, like, should I leave it the full half an hour?
Yeah.
He was already making jokes about premature ejaculation that I literally had no idea what he was talking about at all. It was a very uncomfortable evening.
Did you just... You just stayed in his bathroom for half an hour doing nothing?
I think I sort of tried a bit. You know?
You gave it a go?
Sort of got undressed. I wasn't quite sure how undressed I was supposed to get, necessarily, or was I supposed to be doing...
Because another boy had told you to do it.
Yeah, was I supposed to do things up against the pages, or, you know, leave it freestanding? Should there be a music stand or something like that? I wasn't quite sure. It's a very stressful experience.
Music stand. That would be very stressful. I wouldn't like that.
Yeah.
If a boy told me I'll meet you in half an hour. Also, I can even do that now. If someone said to me,
get in that booth
and take half an hour.
Yeah.
No. I couldn't do it.
And you've got all the tricks.
I know all the tricks by now. I'm a 30-year-old man. I know all the tricks of, you know. Yeah.
You're in there with your beaker of cold water.
Yep, I'm in there. I've got my...
You've got your gag.
Got my...
your gag and noose.
Yep, got my Pringles.
Yep. You got your political podcasts.
Yep.
It's all ready to go.
Yep. I was laughing too much now at the image of... Yeah, but I don't think that was fair, what he did to you.
Well, he's gone now, hasn't he?
He's in New Zealand, forced out on other people over there, nice Kiwis. Having to go up in different... he's probably got 10 bathrooms in his house now.
I don't know how many.
Every time people come over. Right. Everyone, you know the drill. See you in half an hour.
Screen Talk with Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome to Screen Talk with me, Dan Clark. We have got a brilliant show today. We interviewed Jason Fleming. We talked in a very bizarre little room, so the sound might be a bit weird. You feel like you have a bit of an identity crisis.
I do, because everything in me is ginger, and yet right. My hair no longer is, because I've
aged.
You mean
everything in you?
Well, everything about
it's
my
too
whole
much homebrew, isn't it?
Just my whole personality is based on the fact that I grew up ginger, so I grew up with girls going, he's lovely, but he's ginger, or he's ginger, but he's lovely, or once you get to know him, you quite fancy him. That kind of vibe always happened as I grew up.
That must have. At what point did you actually have the courage to
own it?
Yeah.
I think,
or even approach a woman without thinking they might say the sentence with "but" in the middle of it.
I mean, I used to do a lot of groundwork, way too much groundwork, until women went, shut up and kiss me, which would be that how it used
to went
work.
The other way.
That's always the way.
Charm offensive, yeah.
Charm offensive. I think just as I was getting used to it and going, no, I'm proud I did, then my hair started to change colour as I got older. So in my 30s and 40s, really marriage, I think, was the final. Tony Curran, there's a group of Scottish actors, there's a group of ginger actors worldwide.
I thought you were going to say actors. It doesn't matter where they're from.
They're
actually,
ginger.
It's even more
Eric
specific.
Stoltz, Tony Curran, the geezer off Homeland, who's done a lot for us all. and, you know, we are unified by the fact that... put it this way. One of the first films I ever did, I've done a lot of terrible films that I'm very proud of.
We'll talk about those.
One of them's called Lighthouse Hill.
Right? Okay.
Yeah, never
haven't seen
it.
That, no.
Yeah,
no.
That. Lighthouse Hill came out on VOD, as does my film Eat Locals on Monday, by the way. That's why I'm here, and that's what you should be making sure you remember to buy it on video.
Eat Locals. Yeah.
And it came out, and on the cover of the video is me with the girl. It's a romantic comedy. And I've got black hair.
They photoshopped
my ginger hair to black hair. So you buy the video and then you turn it on and the geezer on the front of the cover is now ginger.
And I wonder if they've got some way of working out how many people turned off in the first couple of minutes.
Realising he was ginger. Yeah. How could you have
and this is
comedy?
Not what I bought into.
How can you have a romantic comedy with a ginger person? So it's not that I'm paranoid. It was real. You know, this
that
happened. When I said, why have you changed my hair colour? They went, no, you haven't. I went, it's black. I look like Shane Ritchie. And they were like, no, you don't. We can look at it in a minute.
Yeah,
see.
We'll get that. Can we get a picture of that?
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, did you worry at a point when you decided to act that it would hold you back?
I think it has.
Really?
It has, yeah. I mean, I remember watching about 2 years ago a Kentucky Fried Chicken advert with a ginger family and going, wow, man, that's amazing. A whole family of ginger people on the telly.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally.
You were like a young black person seeing The Cosby Show for the first time, weren't you?
Exactly the same.
Wow. I mean, I know that it's...
Am I right? They've just put up a photograph.
Yeah.
I've got black hair, right?
Yeah, the...
Dark brown. It's not brown.
Can I see?
Come on.
Can I see?
Definitely. Hold on, that's a still from the... Come here, let me see it.
That's a tweakage, definitely.
No, that's not it.
That's not the one,
That's not the poster. That's
there
the poster.
There you go.
That's the poster.
That's
Thank
not
you.
Even like a black that people... black a sort of black that people's hair could even be.
It's John Travolta from Greece.
It is.
It's ridiculous. So there you go. So we've just shown the listeners a picture of me on the cover of Lighthouse Hill.
It looks like the film is about a guy that wants to be John Travolta in Greece.
Yeah.
Who lives in a lighthouse. Now, that's a movie I would see, by the way.
Now, by the way, that's a better movie than Lighthouse Hill. Anyway.
Yeah. So now you're disappointed because you spent so many years trying to own your gingerness. And
then it disappeared.
But have you worked more since it disappeared?
No, because people are sort of disappointed because they know that I'm a ginger cader and they know that I'm a, you know,
yeah.
I'm at the forefront of the struggle.
What about,
so when I turn up slightly brown hair, they're like, oh, mate, I thought you could be more ginger than that.
We wrote you in, we changed the script to suit your hair colour.
Yeah, exactly.
And now you've let us down. What about directing? Does being ginger hold you back as a director?
No, it doesn't. Eric Stoltz proved that.
Yeah.
He's now directing.
Is he?
And what's his name out of... Chachi out of
Ron Howard.
Ron Howard, he can do it too.
It was actually, it was Richie. Chachi's the really sort of Trump supporting, like crazy Republican one. Who, by the way, you just said before we just when we met now that you were going to a Trump rally, which you got the.
Mate, I had an hour free this morning between interviews, and I went, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to this massive Trump rally that's in my diary that says Parliament Square, 12 o'clock today.
Yeah.
So I turned up, and it was me, two Japanese tourists, and this was the sound at the Trump rally. When, guess you got the wrong date, Jess.
Was that the Japanese tourists whistling near you? Or?
They were doing burning impressions. Two Japanese tourists doing burning impressions.
You got the day wrong. And also, you just called up your wife, and then you went, yeah, sorry, I know you're at the food bank.
Yeah.
So now I have this image of you two as these really worthy fighting causes.
No, I'm just skint. She's at the food bank getting grub.
Right, okay. God, being ginger really has held you back, hasn't it? Oh, my God. Well, where do you stand on line readings? Like, go, look, can you just say it like this?
Well, Guy Ritchie, you know, if you go, it's a deal, it's a steal. You go, well done, well done. I didn't say it's a deal, it's a steal. I said, it's a deal, it's a steal. It's sounded the value's entry. Say it like that, Fleming. Say it exactly like he did it. He goes, thank you very much, moving on.
Well, and is that, how do you feel about that?
It's all right when it's Guy, because he wrote the stuff and it's pretty poetic.
So it's different if it's the writer.
If it's Alan Bennett or Guy Ritchie, I do put those two together, quite openly and without apologising. I think that some of Guy's stuff is so poetic. I mean, I don't know, you know, I saw Sword and Stone, what's it called?
Oh, King Arthur.
King Arthur.
Yeah.
And you know, he's got King Arthur going up against one of the baddies, and he's got his sword, and the baddie's this big sort of, you know, blue screen monster, and he goes, you haven't had enough porridge this morning to take me on, son. And I'm sorry, but I think that's fantastic. And
he didn't actually say son, did he?
He really? Said, you haven't had enough porridge to take me on, son. And I know that Guy Ritchie's turned to Charlie Hunnam and gone, this is how you say it. You go, you haven't had enough porridge to take me on, son. And then that's what Charlie's done. And it's brilliant. And he said to the, the Knights of the Round Table, he went, chop, chop, lads, get a fucking move on. And I love all that. And I think it should be celebrated, and it's wonderful.
It sort of cuts through a lot, because sometimes you can overanalyze, overtalk about stuff.
I think that mock Shakespearean nonsense in those sort of period films. You know, Guy Ritchie did his... What the hell did you expect Guy Ritchie to do with King Arthur? Except that.
Do you think that he's doing Arthur...
Aladdin.
Aladdin.
Do you think Aladdin's going...
Genie's going to come out and go, oi, guff, look, bosh,
listen,
do this.
You've got three rubs of a lamp and that's your lot. All right? So when you rub, be careful. Thank you very much.
All right. Now, do one.
No, maybe he is doing that, but it'll be a lot more poetic than I've just done.
Sarah Love and My Siggy on FUBAR Radio.
Our special guest on the show today, DMC, Run DMC, baby!
Out of every other form of entertainment, there's a different responsibility with hip-hop. And nobody wants to acknowledge that. That being said, when it comes to the music side of it, this isn't about censorship and freedom of speech. I don't want to tell anybody, you can't make that record, you can't say what you're saying. But when it comes to hip hop, it's about homicide and genocide that comes with this. Think about it like this. We did a record called My Adidas, right? It was fun, it was dope. And besides the fact that Adidas paid attention to it and gave us an endorsement, people was like, yo, I gotta get those ideas. That's power. That's powerful. So when that happened, me, Run, and Jay said, yo, we gotta watch what we say. So personally, me, when I made my rhyme wasn't gonna be about, I got more Adidas than you. You know what I'm saying? My rhyme was about where these Adidas that you wear can go.
In your opinion, is hip-hop's golden era?
Wow. Well, for me, it's I would say 78 to 82.
Wow.
Is the golden era. Because when I go back and listen to, you know, the Treacherous Street, stuff like that don't happen no more. It sends chills up your spine. You know, dude's got nice bars and nice verses, and ooh, he dissed this person and it's that. But the overall presentation and representation of the situation in the hip-hop population is not there no more. I got all the cassette tapes of all the live performances from 79 to 1982. And there was a spontaneity and creativity and innovation that Run DMC took to the recording studio, which makes us stand out. It's tricky to rock around, to rock around. That's right on time, it's tricky. This speech is my recital. I think it's very vital to rock around. That's right on time, it's tricky. Is the time. Here we go. A lot of rap songs outside of the great classics, these artists with these hit records cannot do when they get a certain age because they're going to look foolish. Tricky, we can go do Tricky any show, any genre of music, any age group, and kill. I remember when we was going to make a record with Michael Jackson. Two times. We met with Michael Jackson two times in person in L.A. at his studio. Michael Jackson wanted to make a record with us. The joke was Run DMC was too busy to make a record with Michael Jackson. Because Raising Hell, we was like, yo, Mike, we're going to Rome. And when we get back, but when we would get off for the two or three days, he was gone. Oh, but our joke was, we met with Michael Jackson two times. Michael Jackson wanted to make a record like Peter Piper with us.
Oh, wow.
Imagine when we met Michael Jackson, he said, I love the Walk This Way record. I love what y'all did with Steven Tyler and Aerosmith. But he said, I like that Peter Piper record with the bells and the 808. And he started doing the beatbox. Michael Jackson started doing Peter Piper with his mouth. And it sounded way doper in the record. He started going, he said, and I'm looking, doing a fucking beatbox. And he wanted to do that Peter Piper picked peppers and rah, rah, rah. Imagine if we would have made a record with Michael Jackson.
Gosh.
But when we met him, he said, Michael Jackson said, you guys should have took home all the Grammys. That's what he said. He said, you guys are great. He said, everywhere I go, I hear your music and I see y'all globally. So when Run DMC was nominated for, we was the first rap group nominated for a Grammy before they had a rap category. Our American Music Award thing, we was up for five of them. We was up against New Edition, we lost. We was up against Whitney Houston, we lost. We was up against Luther Vandross, we lost. We was up against, I think it was Metallica, we lost. Now it got so popular, they had to say, we got to create a category for them. But the next year, they gave it to Will Smith and them. But it was crazy. They didn't want to give it to us because the way we looked.
It's reasonable to say there were racial undertones to how hip-hop was treated in them early days as well.
Right, right, right. But it was crazy. All the white people loved us. The bands, not the establishment. Bon Jovi, Cher, the Ramones. All of those people loved us to death. And that being said, now Chuck D said, he said, hip-hop is easy now. You gotta understand, me, Chuck, Eric B., and Jazzy Jeff from Fresh Prince looked at Rakim and said, we can't do that. So the audience used to look at Rakim and was like, yo, I can't do that. Now you could look at, I don't wanna say no names, this young dude and this little dude, and you could go home tomorrow, make the same record, change a few words, and that's the only thing. Our hip hop's responsibility has been overshadowed by its own success.
There was a period of time where I didn't really see much of Run DMC doing shows and things like that. And so I've always wondered, what is your relationship like with Run? I mean, are you guys friends?
Yeah, we're friends, but we don't see each other because he's a TV star. 75% of what I do is going to high schools and middle schools and talking on hip hop, talking on respect and responsibility, talking on the importance of education, talking on the importance of working together. I said, when you young people work together, y'all created a whole culture called hip hop. So if kids your age 40 years ago did that way back then. What can y'all do right now? I said, we don't need no more rappers. We need more journalists. We need more playwrights. We need more artists and sculptors and storytellers and directors. Really, hip-hop didn't just create rappers, y'all. And they start looking at me. I said, everybody in this room, there's about seven. How many people in a rap? Seven hands will go up. And I said, now be honest with me. Who's the best in here? And they'll be, yo, he is. He's really the great. I said, there's a $1 billion company in this room right now. Y'all running around with your divos, trying to get on these labels who don't care about y'all, who are not going to help you until you get 1 million likes on YouTube and this and that. Let him be the rapper. You go to school for 4 years and you get a business degree. You go to school for 4 years and you get a law degree. You go to school for 4 years and you get your communication degrees. 4 years, that's all it takes. The rapper's going to perfect his crap. You come back and get him. You set up your own label and you do it all yourself. That's what we did. We didn't ask for permission to do hip-hop. We said, what are we going to do? Let's take our music to the park and turn it up real loud for the world to hear that it's beautiful. So now it became beautiful. And it was because what we was doing was good.
We're all, not just hip-hop heads, not just rap fans, popular music and culture is so indebted to Run DMC and the work. But how is it that you would like to be remembered, though? Because you said that to me, you know, you never want to be called a rapper. Right. You're only an MC, which I agree with. But how is it that you would like to be remembered?
I never thought about that. Oh my God. I don't have to put it like this. I don't need to be remembered. I just don't want to be forgotten.
Michael Payne on FUBAR Radio.
I'm here right now with possibly one of my favorite on screen actors of the last year. The closest is dead.
Who's that?
Don't even know how to link.
James Gandolfini. I've told you this many times. I've started watching
The Sopranos
again, after years and years and years, and I absolutely love James Gandolfini.
It's amazing.
I can't even believe I'm saying this, man.
Don't make it weird.
Okay. Do you know what? All right. Introduce yourself.
Hi, I am Brian Tyree Henry, and I play Alfred Paperboy Miles on the show Atlanta.
And I'm doing gun fingers now.
Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, all right. I love it.
Do you know why? I fell into broadcasting, really and truly. I'm an MC, and I came and I did an interview on this very station, and they just never, ever got rid of me.
That's that's dope, man.
And I've got a lot of broadcaster friends that have been doing this shit for years, and have never got to interview their favorite actor. Do you know what I mean? So
I'm really your favorite actor of the past year.
Honestly, man, like Atlanta is my shit. Okay. Natalie is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's brilliant.
We've had a lot of chats about it in the pub next door, like going through our favorite scenes, our favorite episodes, and kind of dissecting it. That's how much we love it.
That's the dopest shit I've heard.
Honestly,
since I've been here.
So we're gonna talk about it with you, but just talk about you as well, you know?
Okay.
Because there's a lot that Atlanta brought up for me about you as well. You know, you just research someone, you become a fan of someone, you want to do a bit of research, and there's a lot I didn't know at first.
Okay.
You know? So yeah, let's talk about you. You're an accomplished actor. Like you're certified by Morehouse, Yale, right?
Yeah.
And you've done a lot of stage, a lot of theatre stuff.
Yeah, just finished one. Yeah.
But came onto my radar as a TV actor, you know? What is your favorite kind of style of drama?
The one that pays the most. I don't know, man. It's all about content. It's all about the stories that I'm able to tell and, like, what's out there and, like, you know, stages. You know, it's been around for a long time, so a lot of the stories are, you know, pretty much already there, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot more contemporary writers coming out that I admire and love, but stage is hard, man. Like, it's really hard. I just finished doing a play on Broadway called Lobby Hero.
Congratulations on the Tony nomination.
Thanks, man. Yeah, and I just came off of that as well, so it's like, it's nice that I got recognition for that, you know, with Broadway being, like, the oldest form of, you know, like, I guess, doing, you know, like celebrities come there and, you know, people are made big from there. So it was nice to go back because, you know, I did Book of Mormon. I originated that first, and then that was a musical. But to go back to a play, that was like, whew, okay, good. All right, like back on the boards again. But
so that's a problem for me, can I just say, because I never got to see Book of Mormon. Such was the success of it in this country that I never could get a ticket.
Yeah, because it's still here, right?
It is here.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy that it's still here. It's mental. Just like unbelievable, man. But then, you know, doing TV, I never expected for this to be my first major thing, like to right off the bat get a character like Alfred and be able to go in, you know, like I went to college in Atlanta and this is literally where I became who I am, you know, like I discovered acting and theater down there when I was 18, and from the years 18 to 22, that's who I was like, yeah, this is what I want to do, this is who I am. But when I saw that there was a show coming out called Atlanta that was so quintessentially black, I was like, I gotta do this, man. Yeah. And I never thought that the opportunity to play somebody like Alfred would ever present itself to be on TV, let alone reach this far.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, let alone reach this far where people actually related with this dude and actually cared about this dude and actually, like, kind of saw, you know, the kind of stuff I was putting into him. It just means a lot to me.
Yeah.
And then that allowed for all this other crazy shit to open up, because like I've got like 8 movies coming out this year where I'm playing 8 different kind of people as well, and it's like
you're genuinely answering all my questions. Oh, okay. Like, that's a wrap.
I don't mean to take a job from you, man. I'm sorry. I mean, I don't mind it, but you know, food bars and shit. But it's been wild, man. I've been doing this for 11 years now, so it's really nice to be a part of the number, no matter how old I am or how young I am. Like, I'm able to go out there and crank out something new and fresh that people like.
I love the fact that you've touched on absolutely everything I was about to fucking say, man. But the relatability is the thing for me, you know. That's the thing that I kind of have to start my interjection with. And every single aspect of being black has been portrayed for me, but it hasn't been done in a way where, like, pastiche. It seems so fucking authentic, and like, you know, the comedic situations happen in such an authentic way. But then there's this aspect of surrealism in it as well. Yeah. But then the thing is, even that surrealism for me is an aspect of life. Some surreal shit happens, but people don't think that surreal shit happens to black people because of the way that black people have been portrayed in every other fucking movie. Anything. They just think all it involves is shooting, getting shot at, rapping, fucking bitches, doing drugs in some form, being involved in it, but nothing surreal ever happens. Do you know what I mean?
You know, I made it a point in my mind, like, as I was at Yale studying, you know, like, there weren't a lot of parts for us. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I was like, I would reserve myself to be like, I was like, if somebody approaches me and asks me to be a fucking slave, I swear to God, I will commit arson on every fucking thing they own. I don't care. I literally thought about being an arsonist. I was like, let somebody come to me with some shit like that. I don't
care. Honestly.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, I think that's a big testament to Donald and to Steven and even to our network, you know, to be willing to allow us to say the things we say, because, you know, I'm from the South. I'm from North Carolina, but I was also raised in D.C. and, you know, I was raising the projects as well, and, you know, like, I was below the poverty line and shit like that, and I know what it's like to eat a Spam sandwich and, you know, fried bologna and cheese, and, like, you know, I know, we all know these things as black people, but I also know what it's like to be limited because of my skin color, you know, and there's no place more apparent than that than the entertainment field, you know what I mean? Like, there's no place more telling you no than the entertainment field. So when I got Atlanta, the one thing I remember thinking of when I saw Alfred, because I don't know if you noticed, I rarely call him Paperboy. Like, I was like, I don't really want to, like, just, like, diminutive, you know, make him that.
Of course, that's not what defines him, you know, the fact, like, that he's, you know, an MC.
Like, I was like, that's for everybody else, you know what I mean? That's the happening for everybody else. But the one thing I wanted to keep was his name and make sure that he knew who he was and to humanize him. And I remember reading the script, I was like, okay, I say nigga a lot. I say nigga a lot, great. And I remember going in there, I was like, what's my nigga limit? I need to know right now. Because I was like, I feel like he's going to, this is how he talks. This is what he knows. He shouldn't have to apologize for that. And FX was like, you go as much as you want to. And I was like, cool, that's great. I was like, can he have a blunt at the same time? Yeah. You know, like, this is who, like, what is great about our show, man, is that Atlanta is the fifth character. You know what I'm saying? Atlanta is the city that all this stuff takes place in. It's the birth of all of our friendships and, like, our families and things like that. And I just didn't want to lie on it. You know, like, I know for a fact that when I went back to shoot Atlanta, I remember, you know, there are so many scenes with my couch, you know what I mean? So that area that we're in is called The Bluff. There were times when we were filming over there this season that you could hear the gunshots. And I was like, all right, we're done for today, right? Like, we're done? I was like, because shit is real right now. Mm. Like, so, and I would point over to the street aside. I was like, yeah, I used to buy my weed over there, guys. So I think my homeboy's still over there if we want to roll over there. Before. Mm. It's so funny because I think you notice that Alfred, like, says a lot this season how he just wants to keep it real.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And he wants to keep it real. And it's just like, what does that really mean? Because now this season, you know, he's getting more notoriety as Paperboy. Like, he's from Atlanta. He's born and raised there. He's never left it. He knows every street. He knows every corner store. He knows, like, he knows everybody. Mm. But now they know him. So, like, there's nowhere really safe for him. Like, the episode where I'm getting mugged by my plug.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's like, no, that single's going to do good. I ain't making no fucking money off of that, man. And he's like, but it's also like, Alfred, you can't keep doing the same things that you used to do anymore because now you are happening to people. Donald said this at a For Your Consideration Emmy event, man. It was one of the most prolific things I ever heard. He was like, well, yeah, now you are happening to people. People don't happen to you. You happen to them. And I was like, shit, man, like, that's exactly what this season is about. For Alfred, for me, man, like, I mean, like, when I first read it, I instantly knew who he was. Like, I just knew, like, how I wanted him to be, what I wanted his relationships to be with people. I think that the one thing that we wanted the most is that it's so funny because they say it's a new comedy or it's a comedy coming from Fox or FX, and it's like, it's so much more than that. Like, yeah, I remember Donald saying he wanted to be like the Twin Peaks for rappers, and I was like, oh, fuck.
We've made that comparison.
Because it's absurd. Like, there are a lot of things that happen within that business and within that industry that are just so stupid and just so absurd. And I think that I love that it happens in Atlanta because that universe is like that.
Yeah.
That city is like that. We've excelled at, like, you know, like, it, when I went to college there, man, the music scene was off the chain. Like, I got to college in 2000, and that was like the jump off of Organized Noise. Mm-hmm. You know, Outkast had their albums. Mm-hmm. Lil Jon came out of nowhere. You know, Sleepy Brown, all these people. And that sound was just something that you just had never heard before.
This is true. And same then, over here.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And so then, like, we go 10 years later, and now it's the land of film and television. And you're like, what the hell? And then you go a little later, and now trap music is like the thing. I'm like, what is going on in Atlanta? Like, I never thought the Migos or 21 Savage, you know, or anything like that would ever blow up the way it did. But it is that place, man. Yeah. And so I think what's great about what we do on this show is that we try to capture all that. I mean, like, the authenticity of that city is something that we try to hold up to. Because you could never hold your head up again if you went to Atlanta doing a show called Atlanta and Atlanta thought you were whack.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'd be ran out of the town, you know?
It's incredible. It opens my eyes on so many levels because I think of it and, you know, you described it as a black show and it's black to the extras. Do you know what I mean? And, and it makes me think there are so many talented actors out there, or are they just real people that you've got as extras? Well, how did you find so many people that can play a very small role in an episode but be so memorable?
Well, the stories are real, you know what I mean? Like, there's one scene this season. I don't know. Am I spoiling stuff? I don't know.
No, not
do
for
this.
Me. I don't give a shit about anyone else personally. I don't know how to do this, you know, man. I forgot anyone was even listening.
I don't want to be out here because in the States, if I did this, they would be at my door like, what the fuck have you done? So I'm trying to make sure that. But there's an episode called Champagne Poppy this season, where Van is trying and her homegirls are trying to meet Drake.
Seen that
and
one.
So they're trying to get to Drake. And there's a scene, and it's one of my favorite, like, I die laughing every single fucking time, where she is sitting across from that white woman who was dating the black dude who is a black actor, and she's just going in being like, we ain't got all the opportunities in the world, bitch. I can't believe that you got, like, it's the funny, but it's real.
Yeah.
What she's saying is real.
Yeah.
And like, I think that's what's so great about our show is that I feel like, you know, these situations that you all are witnessing are things that we, as the actors in real life, are witnessing too.
Yeah.
It's not like we, regardless of the success of this show, we still have to walk this world as black people
no
too.
Punches.
Like, there's nothing, there's no territory that we can't hold sacred because, like, we walk it too.
Yeah.
You know, there's no kind of, and I think that's the greatest thing about it is that we want everybody to know that these stories are theirs too. You know, my demographic is very, very, very wide. I will get older white women who, like, have pearls and, like, their great grandchildren are trust fund babies who are probably, like, in the White House and shit. And they'll be like, oh, yeah, do you know that Paperboy is our favorite character? Like, that moment that you just, like, I'm like, excuse me? Like, are you sure that you? And it happens all the time, man. And for me, that's a testament to a show that kind of transcends what people may think it should be. Like, we've created this weird kind of, like, I call it like the Aurora Borealis of shows. Like, it's this phenomenon that happens every once in a while, and but you stare at it and you gaze at it, you know it's amazing.
Honestly.
But you just don't know, like, who it's going to affect and who it's going to touch.
Yeah.
So I'm very grateful to even be sitting here across with the two of you. Like, it, the fact that over here, it, that it's held in and with this preciousness of the authenticity, like, that makes me, it lets me know that I'm doing what I'm supposed to do.
James Acaster on Fubar Radio.
Myself and Lizzie Roper are going to put our iPods on shuffle. Hello, Lizzie.
Hello.
Lizzie Roper's my guest today. Here we go. My iPod first. I'm going to show you how to use that. Yeah. We'll get to the bottom of your laugh. Here we go.
Excellent.
I look pretty cool.
Yeah.
Let me take you down, because I'm going to Strawberry Field. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry feels forever. Let me take you down, because I'm going to
Beatles for the first time on this show. Just never come up before. Strawberry Fields Forever. Great song.
Fantastic.
I mean, you know, it'd be pretty good. Actually, I wouldn't have been surprised.
Mm-hmm.
You're quite controversial so far. You might have just said a pile of shit.
No. I don't ever trust people who don't like the Beatles.
No. Every now and again you get people like that.
There's always something in them. I mean, like, they're the huge canon. Yeah. How can you dismiss it all?
They're attention seekers, though, aren't they? That's all they're doing.
Were they? Those people. Yeah.
The Beatles. Well, the Beatles probably were, but in a good way. But
I don't like it when people go, Rolling Stones or Beatles. Rolling Stones and Beatles.
Yeah. It's weird to limit yourself, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got one life.
Yeah.
I'm sensing on one of those two.
Although I spent a year living in Liverpool quite recently. And every single shop you go in Liverpool has the Beatles playing. And actually, I really liked it.
You enjoyed that?
Yeah.
I imagine I'd go bananas. We'd be able to deal with that.
What's your favourite Beatles album?
A Revolver is my favourite one.
Mm. Rubber Soul.
Mm. Rubber Soul's good. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, Revolver. I had to do a when I was in that band, we had to do a gig where everyone had to cover a Revolver song. So we did Good Day Sunshine.
That's a good gig.
Yeah, it was good. It was in London, and it was also the first time I ever tried a Nando's.
Wow.
Was that day. They'd just opened across the street, so I went over, but I thought, because it's fast food, I'll just get the really hot, the hottest one.
Oh, yeah. And you're a boy, and you have to. It's the law, isn't it?
Killed me.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, it's a one-inning boy.
Yeah, did it rip your throat off?
Boys have to do it to look tough.
Oh, yeah, boys to men, yes.
That wasn't why. I wasn't trying to look tough. I thought that it would be not hot.
Yeah.
I thought this is the kind of place where, so I was like, if I want to get any flavour at all, then I have to have the hottest one.
Uh-huh.
And destroyed me. I was streaming from everywhere.
So is that what led you into comedy? Doing Mr. Frontman in the band, and then...
Kind of. That stopped, and then I didn't have anything to do, so I started doing this.
Uh-huh.
Started doing this to fill the time.
Did you have a day job?
Yeah, I was working in the kitchen for 12 hours a week. Yeah. You like that, do you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Mm. What's that noise mean that you
that
made?
That means, sexy.
Sexy, is it?
Working washing up pots and pans.
Yeah, I did
all the grease, all the bits of food.
Yep.
Oh, all that sort of sexy, all the shouting.
All the sexy shouting.
The Gordon Ramsay.
Yep.
Oh, you are the weakest link. Make my dinner.
Yeah.
All that.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. That's what Gordon Ramsay would shout at me when I worked with him. Yeah.
What restaurant was it?
It was two places. The Trading Post in Kettering and the Star. bar in Geddington, just outside of Kettering.
Kettering. I went out with a bloke from Kettering.
Tell me all about him, please.
He was a unicyclist. He used to ride a 6-foot unicycle. And he had the Evel Knievel act.
Yeah, okay, go on. Yeah. What?
Evel Knievel. He had this tiny, tiny, tiny bike. Yeah, mm-hmm. Like the wheels were like 4 inches.
Yeah.
But he could ride it in this sort of weird Evel Knievel suit with a cape on the back. I picked him up in Edinburgh, obviously.
Of course you did.
God, he was sexy. He was so young.
Was he sexy?
He's one of the sexiest men I've ever been out with. He was.
Why was he so sexy? Describe what he was. What was about?
He took his clothes
off
when you wanted to weep. He had a proper six pack and stuff. He had
Peter Andre.
Olivey skin and cheekbones, and yet he was funny and would sort of put himself out there. Mm. So then his act was.
Did you kiss him?
Several times on his bottom and everything.
You kissed his bum?
No.
It's okay if you did.
Don't leave me down rimming backwater. No.
And so I was telling you
about his act.
Quite nice.
And then he would go over 4 miniature buses.
Yeah, yeah. I think we should. Oh, so I'm turning your iPhone on now to put your shuffle on. Two little doggies.
Yeah.
Two little doggies there as your wallpaper.
Bunny and Teddy. They're my sister's dogs.
They're your sister's dogs.
Yep.
But you love them like they were your own.
She's got 4. Well, I'm very. I live on my own with a cat, but I do love a dog.
Yep. I just tried to put my own passcode into your phone.
I've done that.
That's what I did. Well, what is it? Just tell me it.
Really?
Say it out loud, and I'll put it onto the phone.
No, I'm not going to tell the whole world my passcode. Really? I'm certainly not going to tell you.
Oldest trick in the book.
Yeah.
Your case is a cat.
Yeah, that's Phoebe.
So whose cat's that?
That's my cat.
So that's your cat.
Yeah.
And the dogs are the.
And my dogs are. Jane's got. She's got 4. She's got 3 chihuahuas and one huge dog that
really?
Eat the chihuahuas. Yeah.
Lovely. Right. We should play it. You ready? Here we go. The first one is. You've done all right here. You've done very well. Hall and Oates.
Yes.
I never really play that sting because you mentioned fingering earlier. I thought I'd play that one.
There you go.
You like that, don't you?
Everybody's happy.
Yeah, 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 you like that. Hall & Oates, Family Man.
Yes.
What a great start.
Thank you very much.
Very good start, very strong. Yeah.
Are you the lord of all cool?
I'm not at all.
Good.
No,
but you were playing dub star, dubstep, dub dub, rub rub at the beginning, weren't you?
Yeah, that is what it's called, actually. I didn't think you were going to get it right first time, but you did. That is exactly what I was playing. I was playing dub star, dubstep, rub 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 rub, or whatever you rub a dub tub.
I missed the whole garage thing.
Well, you called it garage for what?
Garage. I missed the knock through living room era. It just sounds nasty.
Yeah. Well, it's not all for me.
Yeah.
But the ones I like dubstep, I've only really got that. A couple of albums by Scream. But I really like him. Yeah.
I think, you know, for me, well, rap. See, rap, I couldn't go anywhere near. Rap really upsets me. Rap genuinely upsets me.
Why? Why is that?
Because it's so ugly. It's so ugly. And then you've got all the sexism and the nastiness. But, oh, God, so you're rhyming and you're rhyming quickly. I don't care. You know, I mean, 3 Feet High and Rising, fantastic.
Yeah. Right.
The Blondie rap, fantastic. But we should have just stopped there. Nobody needs
those
to
two.
Do any
one
more,
album yes, and one no, album. What rap did
and,
you say?
Blondie. And the man from Mars is eating cars. It's appalling.
Yeah.
And it's so you must know it. But it kind of sums up rap for me. It's just rhyming bad words together.
It's really not, though. Not all rap is misogyny.
Oh, show me the poetic rap and I'll show you my fucking arse.
Stop bringing up your butt.
You're drawing it out of me through osmosis.
I'm not doing anything. There's no osmosis happening on your butt.
Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
I believe we've got our first guest, Duncan, in here ready to come in.
Oh, amazing.
Hello.
All right, Duncan, how you doing, mate?
You all right? Who's that?
It's Bobby.
Oh, blood, Bobby, you look different.
Oh, good, I hope.
You look different. Yeah, I like your hair like that. I normally have only seen you when you've got your hair slipped back.
Yeah, I'm still rocking the lockdown bonnet, Dunk.
No, it suits you.
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm not too bad. Just been watching loads and loads of box sets on Prime Video and Netflix, really. That's consumed my life.
Well, for the last 4 months, that's all you've been doing?
Yeah, that's pretty much all I've been doing. I've watched from start to finish every single episode ever made of The Walking Dead. And if anybody knows what The Walking Dead's about, there's like a lot of seasons, so there's a lot of episodes. A lot of hours have gone into watching everything of that, yeah.
That's how a lot of people have been coping with the lockdown, haven't they? And I think, you know, well, Bobby's been hitting the gym pretty hard, to be honest. That's what Bob's been doing. I'm sure you've been doing the same, Duncan.
Have you, Bobby?
Literally, I kind of lockdown. I had to concentrate on something, and my fitness was the thing. So yeah, I've been absolute training most days.
Have you? Have you got a nice new body now, Bobby?
Oh well, I'm on the way. I mean, I'm catching you up. I've got a way to go till I'm kind of at your level, Dunk. But compared to where I was, I've had a bit of a transformation. But not even for the body, mate. Amazing. Honestly, what it does for my head when I train, I think it's the best thing. Like for someone's head when you train, that feeling you get.
Oh, it definitely is. You'll have to, I'll tell you what, Bobby, you'll have to slide a little topless pic in my DMs for me. There you go.
I'll send you a little, I'll DM you a little one. Don't you worry about that.
You could just Google him. He's been all over the mail, Duncan. He's been all over the mail this for the last week. So
has he? I need to see. Bobby, you're looking quite good at the moment as well.
Thank you, mate. Thank you. Have you been training a lot during lockdown?
Yeah, I kind of got to the point where I bought loads of shit. Like I bought fucking barbells, dumbbells, kettlebells online, which was so expensive, by the way.
Because everybody can't find them anywhere now. Yeah.
No, exactly. And then I kind of got into that for a couple of weeks, and then I got bored of it all. And then I was just like, oh, do you know what? I'm eating so much, and I'm drinking, having a glass of wine every night with my mum. And I was like, I got to do something about it because I started to feel like no energy to do anything apart from raise my hand to drink wine. Do you know what I mean? So then I was like, right, once we're allowed to get back outside and train, I found a personal trainer to train me outdoors. So I booked like 10 sessions with him and just to start getting back into it. And you're right, Bobby, it does mentally really, really help you. I started feeling good again in myself, started feeling better in myself. So yeah, I did that really. And now the gym's right, I go back to the gym.
That's all you need, isn't it? That's all you need. I mean, I'm saying this with myself who has done basically 2 runs in the last month and that's all I've done exercise-wise. But you know, I'll get back to it eventually. So who cares? But you do have some other work coming up as well, don't you, Duncan? You're going to do a socially distanced drag show.
Apart from watching The Walking Dead, I've managed to watch like every single season of RuPaul's Drag Race from start to finish and all the All-Stars as well. So I've literally caught up with all my seasons of Drag Race, and I'm a huge fan of Drag Race, huge fan of RuPaul. And getting to introduce some of the British queens like Bag of Chips and the Vivian and Miss Davina DeCampo, I'm really excited.
I'm a massive fan of the franchise. I've seen the majority of the American. I've only ever seen a couple of episodes of the UK one, but I know it's all on the BBC plan and I've got to catch out of it. Like, I've met Bag a couple of times and been speaking to Vivian about doing the Get Gobby with Bobby, but I so need to see it. And what I'm really interested in, because I feel like there is a very difference in humour between America and the UK, and I can't wait to kind of see the banter of the UK queens.
It was actually really good. I was a bit nervous about what the UK was going to do, and obviously because it's BBC, they're not allowed to give away like prizes and stuff like that. So you just, all they won was a Blue Peter, a Roo Peter badge, which was a bit lame at first, but actually, it was actually really good. And I've got to say, the BBC did such an amazing job with it. And I was so excited when I was watching it, how great the queens were. And of course, like, as you know, Bag is such a character. And there was some really good banter going on between them all. It was brilliant. I loved it.
It's definitely one to watch.
Oh, definitely one to watch, yeah.
Will you be doing any drag yourself?
Well, last year I was dragging up every single night in the Rocky Horror Show. I got to play Frankfurter on tour, which was like my dream role. And getting to wear the whole makeup, the wig, the suspenders, the heels. I was just living my best life because it's so much fun. It's so liberating. Yeah, I loved it.
But Doug, I've got to ask you, obviously we all know you from being in one of the most iconic boy bands ever, and I'm sure a lot goes on behind the scenes. Now, come on, babe, spill a bit of tea for me. What do we not know? You've got, give us a bit of juice from what would happen behind the scenes in a boy band world.
Well, there was obviously like a lot of girl attention back then, and I've of course was straight back in those days, so there was like lots of girls turning up at certain airports to meet you. So you'd go to like, would land in Singapore or Malaysia or whatever, you'd get your certain girls would always be there waiting for you, and you'd get ones that would always come to me, ones that would go to the boys, for basically they just liked you. And then what we used to find out was it was the same girls used to be there at the airport. We thought we were special, but they were the same girls there for when Take That had landed, or Five Boys had landed, or the Westlife Boys had landed. So yeah, they were like serial hardcore boy band girl fans, and they just wanted to try to sleep with their favorite pop star. I think that was their goal.
And did they ever succeed?
I would never disclose that.
Different times though, wasn't it? Different times.
Yeah, it was, but it was quite funny to find out that, you know, and you look at Backstreet Boys back in the day, and I was like, oh, that's the girl that I know, and she's now got her arm around Nick Carter. I was like,
So them girls were having a lovely old time.
They were in a great time, them ones, yeah. But of course, it was part of the culture really back then. And you always used to have these certain girls turning up at certain places, but it was part of it, I guess, back in those days. It was kind of, it was different back then. There was no social media like this. So, you know, if people wanted to see you, they couldn't like look at your Instagram or go to your Twitter. They would have to literally turn up and stalk you and turn up at the airport or at your hotel or whatever, or at the concerts and everything really.
Do you miss it?
World. Yeah, I do. I miss the touring around the world, because that was always so much fun. You know, getting on an aeroplane and waking up the next day in something, you know, some lovely exotic destination, and you're getting to perform in some amazing place, staying in wonderful hotels. I mean, it was a really great life. We were very, very lucky for the years that we were doing, and we got to travel the whole world, and we were young 20-year-olds, and how many 20-year-olds can say that they've travelled the world and back and got to see all sorts of stuff? So we were really, really privileged.
Do you have any regrets about that time? Oh, go on.
No, after you, babes.
Do you have any regrets about that time, or anything you'd rather have done, not done? Or
I think that I regret that we had better management back then as a band. I wish we had somebody that was like literally being able to like rein us in a little bit more. Because, you know, I'm sure you know, Bobby, you've met Lee and you've met Anthony and stuff, and everybody is so different personality. But, you know, putting us all together, we just need somebody really strong to have managed this back then. And when problems started happening with the band and we started going for that, are we going to break up kind of stage, that's when we really needed that guidance and that management, strong management, to like bring us together and keep us strong, really. And that's kind of what I regret.
Hmm. And you boys are all like brothers. Do you still speak daily to each other?
I wouldn't say we speak daily, but we definitely speak regularly. You know, at least once a week we check in with each other. And, you know, I'm really close to Lee especially, and I speak to Lee probably more than I speak to the others. So, yeah, it's lovely. We all have a really good relationship, which is lovely.
What about in the wider pop star world? Because you guys came at a time when there were loads of like just an era of really good pop, I think, wasn't it? Are there any like other people from that time that you still keep in touch with?
Like when we get to do gigs with the Five Boys or the Westlife Boys, or you know, some of the S Club 7 or S Club 2, I think they are now. You know, we always get on really well. We still get on really well. We have a lot of banter. And actually, a couple of years ago, we got to tour around Australia on a kind of pop tour. We got to tour it with, can you remember the girls from Bewitched? The Irish girls?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Evie and Adele.
So like, Yeah, so we got to like hang out with them loads, and it's just so lovely. And you know, they're part of our kind of, we grew up with them being pop stars in our time. So when we get to do gigs nowadays and we all get back together, we just all have such a laugh, and it's so nice because it's all like a big family, really. So even, you know, when I see, say, like Joe or Mira from S Club or whatever, we always have good banter. We always have a giggle together. And, you know, if I see, I don't know, like one of the Five Boys, we all get on really, really well, which is nice. Yeah. And the Liberty X guys as well, like Michelle Heaton, we always have a banter with her. She's a good laugh. She's a good crack when you get to see Michelle.
What does the future hold for the band, Dunk? Are there any plans?
I mean, I don't know really what's going on. Everything's been so up in the air because of lockdown. And, you know, at the moment, nothing's really going anywhere. I mean, theatres are still closed. We can't go back into theatres and do West End shows and touring shows and theatres because we're not allowed to because of the social distancing.